listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes, 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 yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a headshot! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
Roma and Napoli get set to fire club football back into play across Europe as we get ready for a big build-up to a big weekend of action. It's all smiles at Manchester United on the training ground, but there's plenty to worry about as the Red Devils get prepared to take on Southampton at Old Trafford this weekend. And it's four for L3. That's right, another manager is gone from the Mexican national team. We have a discussion about just who's going to be coming in to the hot seat in Mexican football. Welcome to World Football Daily. I'm Oliver the Juice Wilson, of course, here to bring you the news and the many views from around the world of football. Delighted to say, as always, Rafa will be joining me later on in the show. And we are talking Premier League football today with our very good friend and cracking guest to have on the show, Mr. Nick Schepanek, will be joining us. Nick, of course, a writer for The Independent and various other media outlets, and always a great time when he stops by. Lovely chap as well. I know you don't get to hear much of the kind of off-air recordings and stuff, but he's a very, very nice bloke. As are the majority of, I think everybody, in fact, who we have on the show. We only have nice people come on World Football Daily and talk to football about us. And to be honest, they're all nice enough to chat with us, so we can't really complain, can we, here on WFD? We are getting underway for the big action tonight. Roma taking on Napoli. Can the Italian capital side prove that it is a force to be reckoned with the top dogs in Serie A? We was talking about that earlier on in the week. Remember, if you're a member of World Football Daily, you can go back and listen to our Italian football preview for this week. Just get onto worldfootballdaily.com, sign up. It's cheap as anything. And you can go back and listen to everything that you've missed this week and last week and the week before that. And it goes on and on and on, all the way back indeed. So, sign up and have a listen. We do have our very good friend ready and waiting. So without further ado, I am going to get him on the show. Enough of me. Let's talk to the experts about all things English football today. He is, as I say, a writer for The Independent, a very nice chap as well. And it's always a pleasure to have him on board on WFD. Nick Schepanek joins us here on World Football Daily to talk the Premier League. Nick, how are you doing today, mate? It's a pleasure to have you back on board.
Oh, not so bad, not so bad. Looking forward to watching the Premier League return.
It's felt like a long time. It's been a very seemingly long kind of week or so without Premier League football and with all the hoorah surrounding England. And it's not died down yet because there's been this controversy in the week about Roy Hodgson and what was said at halftime in the dressing room. What's your take on this? It seems that a number of people have backed Roy over this.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, I was at the Arsenal press conference today, and Wenger was asked about it, and you know, his whole approach is, well, you know, he doesn't even really, not even sure what Hodgson said, but he's made the point that, you know, it was always the English way that what happened in the dressing room stayed in the dressing room, and obviously that's no longer the case, you know. So, and he says that, you know, managers obviously can be unguarded, you know, and you know, be pretty direct in the dressing room at half time. And you know, he's not a thrower of teacups himself. He generally is known for, you know, making a few brief, you know, constructive points and talking fairly quietly. But you know, even he has, you know, had to read the riot act on occasion. But, you know, he says that every manager will obviously now feel that anything that goes in there just may find its way onto the back pages. And think Paul Hayward wrote a piece today in the Daily Telegraph, you know, pointing this thing out. You know, will the England dressing room be able to trust, you know, everybody in there? Will Hodgson be able to trust people? I mean, you know, this was an anonymous, you know, tip to a paper, and everyone in the dressing room now in England will be thinking, well, who was it? You know, who's let us down? Who's gone public with this thing that most people, in fact, you know, didn't even notice at the time and didn't even register. And you have to say that the nature of that particular reference, any racism was purely in the ears of the beholder, wasn't it?
Well, that's the thing. It's such an unusual way to find that as a racist comment, if you will. You have to take quite a long route around to be able to find it or take the comment out.
Well, that's right. It suggests that the person who heard that comment and wanted to big it up as racist was a racist themselves, in putting that particular construction on what Hodgson had to say. It's perhaps a roundabout way of going about it, and I don't know what quite Hodgson's method, you know, idea of motivation was. Why don't you just say, give the ball to Andros? You know, let's keep giving him, he's causing the polar defence problem, let's keep giving him the ball. But that's by the by, you know, you can't really blame, and I don't think anybody does, you know, take it as being a racist remark. It was perhaps a slightly puzzling way to try and get the team to keep giving the ball to, you know, to their main danger man. But there you go. You know, as I say, I think the racism was in the ears of the person who decided to make it public, and who that was. Well, you know, a disgruntled member of the squad who wasn't, you know, didn't see themselves getting on the pitch, or yeah, it's, I don't know, it's just despicable, the whole thing, really.
It is, as you said, it's created a tension probably in the dressing room, and the sanctuary of the dressing room has kind of been destroyed slightly by it being leaked out. Do you think that will weigh on players' minds when we get into the friendlies and the build-up to the World Cup, Nick? Do you generally think this could be a serious team chemistry problem?
Well, it could be. You know, the whole point of that, you know, team spirit is it can be a very fragile thing. You know, managers do everything they can to create, you know, the right sort of feeling around the dressing room and get the right mix and, you know, the right chemistry. And it can be upset. You know, everyone knows that, you know, one person in a group who's, you know, is feeling, you know, and has a negative vibe can upset a balance. And obviously somebody, you know, decided to not even to go public, you know, and put their name to anything, and certainly not to do, you know, if they were distressed by it or felt it was racist remark, why didn't they take it up with Hodgson or the FA or a member of Roy Hodgson's staff? They obviously decided that wasn't the way they wanted to go. So, yes, I mean, you can imagine that the England players will. They may have an idea who it was. They may want to find out who it was. And they may want to confront them themselves. That would seem to be, you know, the best way to go, and just have it out with them. But you know, unless they find out who it is, they'll be looking around over their shoulders, saying, "Well, you know, is what I say to the manager going to be on the front pages next? You know, what's it going to be?"
And I suppose you wonder if they do find out who it was, whether that does it jeopardise their place in a World Cup squad? Do you think the fact that they've kind of almost gone behind people's back and made this story public?
Players will always want, almost always want to play with somebody else who gives them the best chance of winning a game. You know, if it turned out to be a key player that the other players felt they couldn't do without, then, you know, that would put them in a great dilemma. And you know, a dressing room contains all sorts. You know, the balance of a dressing room is very complex. You know, the friendships within it, and, you know, the sort of the club likes and club dislikes. You know, we can all remember tales of, you know, problems between Liverpool and Manchester United players within the England team, and a not particularly successful England team at the time. You know, this team has looked to have, you know, a certain sort of morale about it that hasn't always been there, and it would be tragic if anything happened to disrupt that. And you hope that leak came from somebody who is possibly not going to be a member of the team going forward, you know, and if they're disgruntled because they think they're going to be on the outside, then long may they stay on the outside, frankly.
We will see what impact it has on the future of English football, especially in the build-up to the World Cup, Nick. Let's look at the immediate future, though. And, of course, the Premier League back for us. And you touched on Andros Townsend there. Obviously, he was great in those two games for England against Montenegro and Poland. But he now faces a difficult task of maintaining his place in this Tottenham squad. because with Aaron Lennon returning and the number of players that they bought that can play in that attacking role behind Soldado, it's not guaranteed that England's newest star on the international scene is going to be guaranteed a place in the for the remainder of the season in the Tottenham squad.
Well, it's not, but you have to... Well, for one thing, you think he might want to rest after the sheer effort he's put in the last two games. and it might not be a bad idea to take him out of the not the firing line exactly, but perhaps give him a bit of a rest, because you have to say that you presume that Aston Villa have been preparing all week to counter the threat of Andros Townsend. It might not be a bad idea to give him something slightly different to think about. But then, you know, when a player has shown that sort of potential, then you have to just assume that... Andre Villas-Boas will be looking at the idea of unleashing him on defences, you know, up and down the land. And you know, he's been playing well. He's been, you know, one of the successes he's made. He's, you know, made the most of having Lennon out of the team. And you know, I think that all started last season when he played for Harry Redknapp at QPR. You know, when he began to look the player that a lot of people had thought he was for a long time. And you know, he just obviously needed a run of games. And needed someone to believe in him, and I think you know that he seems to be a confidence player. And if you've got players saying, you know, Andros, we're going to give you the ball, just do what you want to do, what you do with it, you know, we believe in you. That's obviously been a fantastic boost for him. And England have had the results, and I'm sure that Tottenham will as well. But then, of course, you know, this is the whole point. Arsene Wenger today was talking about Thomas Vermaelen, you know, and there's a great player who can't get in the team. As he says, you know, if you've got 20 great players in your squad, which is what every manager wants, then nine of them aren't going to play.
It obviously poses problems, these large squads that Tottenham, Arsenal and others in European football have. Villa, on the other hand, have had problems of their own in terms of a few injuries early on in the season. The return of Benteke expected, though, this weekend. Would you throw Benteke straight back into the fray? Do you think Villa have shown that they don't necessarily rely on him as much as maybe others thought?
I think he'd be wise to start him on the bench, and you know, Kozak has shown that he's got something, and you know, Bonlahor and Weimann, you know, are potent attacking forces. So I think it might be good to have Benteke there, you know, because obviously it'll spark the others if they know that that this guy is ready to come on if they don't do the business. And equally, you know, Spurs will be having they'll be thinking, you know, if we take our foot off the gas, then this guy can be thrown on, and you know, we've got a whole new problem to face. I mean, a great problem for Lambert to have, obviously. Very interesting game, actually, you know, because after the Tottenham debacle at home to West Ham, you know, they need to come straight back and do something on a ground where they have traditionally done well. I think they won 4-0 last year, but that, of course, was with Gareth Bale. Perhaps, you know, you might say that they now have a sort of right-sided Gareth Bale in Townsend to throw over. But I think, it's sometimes you look at the fixtures that have been selected for television and think, what are these guys thinking? But I think that could be a cracker on Sunday between Villa and Tottenham.
It could be goals, 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 but it could also be quite stern in terms of Tottenham have been very good defensively at the start of this season. Do you see the Villa attack being potent enough, you mentioned Bonhoeffer and Weimann there, to be able to break down a Tottenham defensive line that's looked very sturdy at the start of the year?
It does look very good. And the thing about Tottenham, you know, I've seen them a couple of times, and you look at this fantastic array of attacking talent they have, and you think, why have they not broken out and you know, put three or four or five past some team? You know, and it seems to be a mismatch with all the talent they've got and the very, very small number of goals that they've scored. You know, Soldado, we're looking for him to break out and find the net, but, you know, he's been a scorer of penalties so far. You know, so it's an interesting one. Christian Eriksen, you know, great creative talent, love at first sight, I think, when the Spurs fans saw him against Norwich. But as yet, you know, there hasn't been this explosion of you know, players taking all the chances that he's created. And I think that West Ham result was a major shock to their system, and how they come back from that, you know, will tell you an awful lot about Spurs' chances this season. I think Villa, you know, a team that's going to have to come onto an attack at Villa Park, that could be just what they need, you know, and there could be spaces for them to exploit. But then the Spurs' defence will have their own problems with that fantastic, you know, three-pronged Villa attack. All three are on the field at the same time.
A tasty tie on Sunday, and the weekend kicks off with a tasty tie as well, with Liverpool against Newcastle. Liverpool haven't been spectacular, but they have been getting results. The international break, will that have helped kill any momentum or that Liverpool had going for them, or will it have given them a chance to refresh and actually come out maybe even a little stronger and more confident after their early season performances?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, I think, you know, Sturridge will probably be buzzing after, you know, some good performances from him. But, of course, Suarez, he's had a long trip at South America, might almost be inclined to think he'll start on the bench, especially with a sort of Saturday lunchtime kickoff. But, no, I think, you know, Liverpool, a little bit like Tottenham, you know, there seems to be more to come from them than they've shown so far. You know, they've had some decent wins. I mean, the first half against Crystal Palace, you know, was a bit of a shop window performance. But then they tailed off in the second half. They've been a great first half team. And another interesting stat I learned: after Tottenham against Arsenal, Newcastle against Liverpool is the fixture in the Premier League that's had the most goals in it. So I guess cue the 0-0. But you know, you sort of have in your mind's eye, you can see, you know, Newcastle attacking at St. James's Park, roared on, you know, by the black and white hordes, and Liverpool hitting them on the break. That would seem to be, you know, tailor-made for Liverpool to come up with a, you know, they've had a few games like that at St. James's Park, you know, when they've, you know, Gerrard's been able to ping the ball, at, you know, from deep midfield to people running onto it. You know, we're all brilliant at forecasting these things, and then, you know, the complete opposite happens. But, you know, you have to think that's going to be an interesting game. And another game which I think is absolutely fascinating is West Ham against Man City. What on earth are West Ham going to do after that 3-0, you know, defeat of Tottenham when they played the 4-6-0 and had a false nine? Is Sam Allardyce going to be brave enough to play without a centre-forward in a home game? I'd love to see him do that and try that, because I've been thinking there have been a few teams, you know, and West Ham have been a good example, when they haven't actually got a natural centre-forward in the team, why not, you know, try and play the Spain way, play the false nine. It worked for them perfectly at Tottenham. Will Sam be tempted to do the same thing in a home game? And I think that could be a very, very interesting match indeed.
Will Sam Allardyce be going a Pep Guardiola? And I don't think many Bolton fans
would have ever thought that. The parallels are obvious, aren't they? No, not exactly. But, you know, I think Sam Allardyce is a very underrated and misunderstood tactician. I think quite often he's done what he's had to do simply because he's been looking for the maximum number of points, so the number of pounds that he's been able to spend. You know, and I remember when the offside law, you know, with the various phases of play came in, and he exploited those uncertainties brilliantly. And I think I'm trying to remember who Bolton were playing. It might have been Leicester, and he realised that the weak link in all of this was the referee's assistant, who had to remember which players had been active and hadn't been in various phases of play. And he was playing, you know, putting players on the other team's goal line for attacking free kicks, so that the linesmen have to remember, you know, where they'd been when the kick was taken. I think Sam Allardyce, a lot of people got the wrong idea about him. You know, he's forever, you know, cracking this old joke about if he'd had an Italian name, if he'd been Allardyce instead of Allardyce, you know, people would have thought about him differently. But, I think there are people who regard him as a tactician whose work is not appreciated. And I think, you know, what he did at Tottenham weeks ago was good, being almost, well, you know, because it worked. And I think it'll be a very, very interesting first 5 minutes at Upton Park tomorrow evening, you know, when we figure out what actual formation is playing against Man City, and then what Manchester City decide to do about it.
Well, that was the thing I wanted to last question, Nick, before we let you go, is for City, Pellegrini's still been kind of getting the balancing act right in terms of Champions League football and Premier League football and when to rest players and whatnot with this City side. And that might help West Ham quite a bit, with a manager that doesn't seem to quite know yet exactly where his best squad is and his best options for particular moments.
Well, no, that's right. I mean, you sometimes get the feeling that some players, you know, are better suited to the Champions League type of football, and others, you know, would be better suited to a game at Upton Park on a Saturday evening. And yes, he may not feel he's entirely sure about which of the players, you know, to pick for which game. And, you know, this is the thing, you know, when you've got that embarrassment of riches, as all the managers who are playing in the Champions League next week, you know, thinking, you know, you think, well, wait a minute, you know, Ozil's could play with Cazorla for the first time this season, you know, because they're both fit, but will Ozil be held back for Borussia Dortmund? You know, all those teams, you know, are making those decisions. And Negredo seems to have adjusted well to English football. Is he the guy to play in Upton Park rather than, you know, to be in the game in Moscow next week? Fascinating. And as you say, has Pellegrini really got the measure of all the people in his squad? You have the feeling that when he does, you know exactly who's best for which situation, the City are going to be a formidable outfit indeed. So this may be the best time to be playing them.
I think with the squad that City have got, I think anybody will be thinking that they are going to be a formidable outfit at some point and come good this season. Nick, it's an absolute pleasure to have a chat with you about the Premier League once again on the eve of the return of club football around Europe, mate. And we always appreciate you taking time to join us whenever we can have you, mate.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks very much. Mr. Nick Schepanek there joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things Premier League football, getting down into a little bit of England as well as the race row continues around Roy Hodgson. And it seems the majority of people are just backing Hodgson and saying, we know this man, let it go. There was no offence meant in any way, shape or form. This whole comment has been taken out of context. And actually, a number of people would really like to know who was the whistleblower, so to speak. I guess you could almost say that this guy is the Edward Snowden of the England dressing room, you know. But let's not get into too much into that, actually. But big thanks there to Nick for joining us here on World Football Daily. A nice little refresher after the international break for what is arguably the best league in the world. And that is very debatable at this moment in time. That's for sure. Big thanks, though, to Nick there joining us here on WFD's Friday. Joining me, as always, right now, is a man who describes himself sometimes as a little scatterbrained. Maybe we just need to kind of get him some medication, level him out, you know, just get him all nice and relaxed. I'm sure he's going to be relaxed this weekend. Of course, Rafa G, getting back down, sitting back down to club football again, Raf. I mean, the international break was nice, but is this a football fan's bread and butter, if you will?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, I'm so excited to get back to the club football. To be honest, I was never one of those people in college. I've never tried that Ritalin stuff or, you know, like I knew a lot of guys in college, especially, you know, growing up in the first couple of years in the dorms that would, you know, use Ritalin to try to study through the night or something.
And really?
Like, yeah. Yeah, it was pretty common practice. Like, while I was in college, at least. I mean, I don't know about today. I never thought about it. Like, I just never used it. I'm not gonna lie. It's one of the few things I have not used. So maybe I do need that because I do get a bit scatterbrained from time to time. Again, very much so looking forward to the weekend and having some club football back on our plates. Plenty to discuss. By the way, this morning I saw on the television that our local news picked up the story of the Welsh grandfather whose son, Henry Wilson.
Yeah, put money on him, 18 months old. His grandfather went to the bookies and said, what will you give me for odds on that my son will play for Wales international football? And he ended up, when Harry made his debut for the Welsh national team this week, ended up, his grandfather took that betting slip back to the betting shop and said, pay up, boy. It's £125,000 he won off that. Yeah, I mean, as if the pride wasn't enough to then cash in on it as well. Must have been pretty nice for that, man.
You take your son out to a nice dinner, huh?
Oh, hell no. Yeah, I'd be like, that was all me. You know, I pushed him to keep going. You know, I had money riding on this thing. I pushed him. Is that technically match fixing as well? I don't know. It'd be great if there was a link to like the Welsh FA that the grandfather had, and he'd been whispering in people's ears like, oh, bring this kid up. Oh, he's going to be great.
Suddenly there's a bunch of like Welsh grandparents paying, you know, or placing this bet just in hopes and driving, you know, the country of Wales to great footballing, you know, feats, really. I mean, who knows? You guys could have a golden generation just about 18 years away.
Yeah, we will find out. Although, come on, I mean, it's not bad at the moment for them. It's a pretty good generation of players with Ramsey and Bale in there. I mean, it's not ideal, and Bellamy's obviously retiring and whatnot, but it's Welsh football, I would say, hasn't been much stronger, to be honest. That's a genuine... that's not me
fair.
Taking the mic
that's
or anything
fair.
Like that.
No, that's fair. That's fair. And I get that.
Except
I
maybe
just,
like the end of Ian Rush and early Ryan Giggs, like that. But they were kind of too far apart, really, to be able to cash in on each other's kind of glory, if you will. So, yeah, I think this is probably the best opportunity in the next few years for Wales to make a major tournament. Unlikely, but we shall see. Raf, we were talking with Nick about the Premier League action coming up this weekend, and I think it's only fitting to get this out of the way because, to be honest, mate, you're boring me now at the top of this World Football Daily. I know the score fixtures. It's someone's got to stop him, and I don't want to have to put my foot down and be the one to do it because... I will. At the end of the day,
I mean, admit it, Juice, that I've been pretty humble, relatively speaking. I mean, sure, you know, I take my credit where credit's due, but I'm not kind of walking around with a big old sign over my head that says IKTS leaderboard.
No, but you should make that sign. yeah, I agree. You know, you've taken it very well. And it's early season at the moment. You know, we're only a handful of games into the Premier League. You know, we're not even into double figures yet. So don't start getting too cocky just yet, but you are doing very well. Let's get IKTS done and dusted for Friday's edition, the traditional last word on the English football breakdown on a Friday. Let's kick it off with the first game of the weekend. And it's a tasty tie to get us back into Premier League football once again. Newcastle taking on Liverpool. Liverpool obviously have had this stellar start to the season. Newcastle in slightly dire straits at the moment. You know, mid-table, but it's been unimpressive from them so far this year. Very kind of skittish in their results, and of course in the pitch in general. You know, they've been pretty shoddy all over the place at times. What are you thinking for this one, man? At St James's Park as well.
Well, let me just say that, you know, looking into this week is always going to be a tough one because one, it's coming off of international week. A lot of these teams have international stars who were making their international appearances over the, you know, the past two games.
Except now, for Hull.
Right.
Sorry. Well, sorry, I just had to put a blazing on Hull. Yeah.
That's fair enough. All right. Sorry, Hull. But so, I mean, that is a good point as well, though. There are teams who are you know, kind of more affected and less affected by this international break with their players. Generally, there's like a lull in the club, and probably some training and some communication back and forth. It's going to be a little bit disjointed. They're not going to have that same kind of chemistry that they had got going going into like the last couple of weeks. So this is why this is just my major excuse for why I'm probably not going to do well this week. I'm going to go ahead and say that, I know it's a little bit long. I'm going to say that Newcastle and Liverpool are going to play to a draw, even though I think that Liverpool are good enough to beat Newcastle away. And I want to call that. I'm going to give it a draw of 2-2.
I can't believe you come onto World Football Daily, Raf, and lie to people like that because it's not going to be 2-2. Liverpool are going to get a 2-1 win on the road against Newcastle. There's going to be people very unhappy once again up on Tyneside, and I think Liverpool are going to comfortably get past this one. Genuinely think they've been
should.
Okay should. Football. It's not great, but I think this wave will just continue a little bit longer. Next fixture of the weekend, Arsenal taking on Norwich at the Emirates. Big game for Arsenal. Can they come flying out of the gates after a very impressive start, aside from the draw to West Brom and the loss against Aston Villa? They just can't deal with the Midland sides, Arsenal. I'm going with a 3-0 win at home. It's going to be a comfortable day against Norwich.
Yeah, it'll be comfortable. And I'm going to say that, you know, I agree with you in one sense that Norwich aren't going to score. I call it a 2-0 win only because there's going to be several players coming off of international duty that, you know, might be easing their way back into club football and you know, recovering from the past two games that they took part in. So that's my prediction there. 2-0 to the Arsenal. keeping their clean sheets going though.
The disappointing, allegedly, Chelsea, who find themselves all the way down in third in the Premier League table. Disastrous start for them under Jose Mourinho. They take on the new boys Cardiff, who of course got that scalp against Manchester City early on in the season so far. At Stamford Bridge though, Cardiff away on the road. And there's off the pitch problems as well with Malky Mackay and Jen Chang, the owner. It's a bit of a catastrophe at the moment, Cardiff off the pitch. Will it reflect on it? I'm going with a big Chelsea win for 3-1.
Yeah, see, I see this as a very typical 1-0 Mourinho drab win and kind of unentertaining. But it has a potential. It has a potential to be really, really good. The depth that Chelsea have is incredible. And there's probably some nice warmed up legs that could have a nice trot out for Chelsea if Mourinho wanted it, but I don't think he does.
Another team that's going to be getting a beating for me, Raf, is Hull. They take on a very good looking Everton side with Romelu Lukaku firing on all cylinders during the international break and before it in the Premier League. It's going to continue at Goodison Park, a 2-0 win against Hull.
You know, I could see Everton drawing here, but I'm going to say I'm stating that for the record, okay? Let's just get that out there. It's on recorded, podcast here. I'm going to say on the World Football Daily Show that Everton will probably draw here, but I'm going to put into my form a 1-0 win to Everton.
Oh, draw, no way. No way coming in that one. One I do Watch have down as a draw here, Raf. Is our next game Manchester United against Southampton, and I am going with a 1-1 draw at Old Trafford. This fixture last year, Robin van Persie scored that hat-trick, including a late winner down at St Mary's early on last year to give United a 3-2 win. Southampton will probably want to avenge that at Old Trafford. I'm going with the 1-1. Southampton looking good and up in fourth place at the moment. Not Champions League side, but they are playing well.
I'm going to say it's going to be a 2-0 win to United, only because I'm hoping Moyes gets somebody focused on this game. Yeah, you're right. You're probably right, Jules. I'm going to stick with my 2-0 Manchester United win. It'd be a nice little statement victory for them to kind of make their push back up towards the top.
It's been tickling my brain all day today with this result. I don't know what's going to happen in this game. West Brom, renowned for being poor against Stoke, can't buy a win against them. Stoke at home always look good, but the Baggies have found a decent run of form recently. The draws against Arsenal and the win against Manchester United at Old Trafford. Wonder whether the international break will break their spirit slightly. I'm going with a 2-1 away win for the Baggies at Stoke.
I'm going to go and say a 1-0 victory for the home team, Stoke City.
Fair play. Swansea against Sunderland. Gus Poyet, his first game in charge of a Premier League side. He takes his side down to Swansea to take on a Swansea side that once again continue to impress the neutral fans with their aesthetically pleasing play. 2-0 Swansea at home.
Yeah, I'm going with you. I'm going to say 2-0 to Swansea as well. I don't think that there's any kind of new manager bump at all from Poyet. I like the guy a lot. Sunderland just,
too much of a disaster zone right now.
Yeah, too much.
Moving into the 5:30 kickoff on Saturday, UK time, of course. Manchester City at West Ham. Manchester City making the trip down to London to take on Big Sam Allardyce's West Ham side. I think City come out the blocks flying sounds like they're handing out pieces of paper in the street.
I know where you're going here, Juice, but do you think that kind of affects their Champions League play at all? I mean, how much of an eye does City have towards Champions League this year?
I think
year?
Pellegrini will have realized that he can't, rest players too much. In the Premier League for Champions League, because they've stumbled on a couple of occasions already this season doing that. So I do think they will come out and go kind of a little bit hell for leather, if you will, try and put on a show against West Ham. I'm going with a 3-1 win.
This is again probably why I'm going to be sucking this weekend. But my thought is that they're probably going to keep keep their not so impressive form, I guess, in the league to me. Maybe just come away with like a 2-1 victory and West Ham kind of make it interesting. I don't know. I could almost see a draw on this one as well, Juice. I really could. I think that certain teams that are partaking in Champions League this week get very distracted as well. Maybe look to rest some players. I'm very interested to see who you got in your fantasy league lineup, because that's where I need to pick up my game personally.
Difficult afternoon predicted for City down in London against Allardyce's men. Moving into Sunday, the only game of the day on Sunday, but this one has got goals written on it for me. Aston Villa taking on Tottenham. Benteke should return for Villa this weekend. Tottenham, of course, with plenty of players involved in international duty. Andros Townsend, obviously, in high spirits right now. Aaron Lennon's close to being back to full fitness too. Raf, give us a score prediction, my man.
I don't know why, but I've definitely been feeling for Aston Villa a lot recently. And I think it's primarily because you just cover them so much, Juice. And I hear so much about your time at Villa Park and blah, blah, blah.
And the results they've had and the performances they've put in do obviously help that as well. I mean, they were good against Chelsea and against Liverpool, just didn't get the results that they deserved. Got the win against Arsenal. And it's been been up and down for them this year, but they've been entertaining.
Agreed. And I think this game will be entertaining, like you said. It's not too much of a goal fest. And I think that it's also a statement win for AVB coming away with a 2-1 victory at Villa Park. And it's a good victory. I mean a statement win because, you know, I think Villa, their defeats have been kind of tough defeats, like really hard-fought defeats. And they're no mugs, if you ask me. So that's a big win for AVB.
I'm going with a 3-2 Tottenham win. I see goals in this one. Tottenham, who have been solid defensively this season, but I think they might come a little bit undone if Benteke can get back fit. And I think the pace of Wijnaldum and Bonglehall will cause problems this year, both looking very confident indeed. The final game, the Super Monday Night Football. I imagine this is going to be a pretty low watched Monday night football. I'm not going to lie. Two sides, obviously, struggling slightly. Second from bottom and third from bottom take on each other. Crystal Palace against Fulham. Will Darren Bent be firing all cylinders, or will Holloway's men pull off a result down at Selhurst Park?
Very boring away win for Fulham. So that's
My prediction on this one is 0-0. Really,
that would be very terrible.
It's so depressing. Well, you can have a good 0-0 draw, Raf, but it is so depressing, in especially doing IKTS and stuff, to predict a 0-0 draw.
Mm-hmm. It's just
sad. It's like you're almost giving up on the game already in terms of chances. That is, of course, the predictions for IKTS. Remember, get your predictions in by the end of today, ready for tomorrow's big weekend of Premier League football. There's football elsewhere. We've got an absolutely stellar Friday night lineup of football this evening. Hoffenheim taking on Bayer Leverkusen. Nice against Olympique Marseille in France, as well as Reims taking on Toulouse. And in Italy, Roma take on Napoli. That is the game everybody should be watching. I'm gutted. Mm-hmm. I'm going to miss that one. There's a few interesting stories still out and about. The England racism route continues. Hodgson said he's very angry and disappointed that somebody was kind of so offended by that, because they should know that he, you know, doesn't ever mean to cause offence in any way, shape or form like that. The rumours, though, that I've been keeping a track of over the last day or so, are these rumours that Iker Casillas has said that he's going to give it 3 months, and then he's going to look at his situation at Real Madrid. And if it's not changed, if he's still not in the side, and if he's not playing regular first-team football, he's looking that he might leave Los Blancos. Now, I can't... It is difficult to imagine Casillas wearing any other shirt apart from Real Madrid's. I mean, what would this shock you if he did end up leaving Los Blancos?
Yeah, absolutely. Just because it's like, I mean, I've practically grown up with Casillas at Real Madrid. It would sting. It would definitely sting, Juice. Do I understand it? Absolutely. And to be honest, I mean, it's a little refreshing. A little kind of inspiring to see that Casillas still wants to play. He still wants to be in the first team. He still wants to be Spain's number one ultimately. And he knows that means that you have to be playing at all times, or we'll be playing on a regular basis for a very competitive team. I'm impressed by him saying that, and I'd be very interested to see where he would go and just how that would kind of, I don't know, shake up Europe a little bit. Obviously I know that Real Madrid are kind of currently comfortable with Diego Lopez, but that is like the heart of Real Madrid. It's just really strange to think about him playing elsewhere. And to be honest, I can't really put him in a different uniform. I'm trying to in my head even now. I just can't do it.
How do you think it affects the dressing room as well? Obviously, such a long-standing leader of that mm-hmm. side, the captain, more often than not during his time at Madrid, and of course, an incredible goalkeeper for both club and national team, and a big influence. There was the outcry when Mourinho dropped him mm-hmm. and kept Diego Lopez in, and then people couldn't really fault the decision because Lopez played very well in that second half of the season last year after Casillas got injured. So, how do you think? I mean, the Real Madrid dressing room gets split up, day in, day out, if you will. There's always something going on in the press, in the papers in Spain. There's always an argument or two at the moment. It's still kind of every so often there's Bale and Ronaldo. Oh, are they getting on? Are they not getting on? What's it doing? Oh, my goodness. Oh, who cares? But losing an influential figure like that, I mean, sure, there's plenty of people in there to take on a leadership role. You think about Sergio Ramos. You think about Cristiano Ronaldo. You even think about when he's back fit, if he does get back into the side again, Xabi Alonso, someone like that. And of course, obviously, doesn't have to be a Spanish or Portuguese player either. They could give it to somebody like probably not Karim Benzema, but maybe a Modric. You give it to.
They could give it to Ozil. Probably not
Mesut Ozil either. That'd be weird. But what do you think it does to the dressing room, Raf? Do you think it does do anything? Do you think that it causes a divide, almost him threatening to leave like that?
Here's the thing. I think it only kind of continues to benefit them in the sense that it keeps that drive for competition. It keeps that fire of competition going within the dressing room, which is, I think, almost essential and kind of needed in a situation like you have with the Galacticos. So, that many egos, that much talent, it needs to be pushed. It needs to be prodded, poked, and made to perform at its highest, at its best. It needs to be almost tempted and just made to perform, I guess. And that's why I think it'd probably be a good thing for them.
It's crazy when you think, because ever since you're following the game from as a youngster kind of thing, it's pretty much always been, there was Peruzzi and Pagliuca for Italy and those kind of great keepers, but when Buffon and Casillas kind of both got on the scene reasonably similar time, it was like world football goalkeeping has been held up to those two. Really, it has in the last decade, over a decade, it's been, well, he's good, but he's no Casillas, he's no Buffon. Right. And to think of Casillas not being at Madrid, coming through there, dominating for club and country on so many occasions. I couldn't imagine him in another shirt. Apparently Premier League sides are obviously looking at him. United, we've got young David De Gea, who maybe
want him, really? I struggle to think Arsenal, of a club who wouldn't want him.
Arsenal, Ozil could be a big factor in that. Could Arsenal maybe come in looking for him? Obviously, they're not too happy with Chesney. With De Gea, it's a great person for De Gea to learn from at Manchester United. I wouldn't suggest Chelsea do, just because they've got Cech, and it would be like bringing in a slightly older Peter Cech. So I think, it would provide competition, but I don't think they need the competition at the moment with Peter Cech. He's still a great goalkeeper. And Liverpool have obviously just bought Mignolet. I think Arsenal or United are really the two that would go hunting. And I don't think City would drop Joe Hart for Casillas, because obviously he's young and getting better, just needs to mature a bit. Although maybe you do wonder if Pellegrini might be caught, his eye might be caught kind of as a short-term substitute for Joe Hart should his foibles continue in front of goal. It'd be very interesting to see, though, Casillas somewhere else in world football. Somewhere else in world football that I wouldn't mind quickly discussing, Raf, Mexico. Yeah. We keep finding ourselves going back to the Mexican national team because, once again, four coaches in a month, another managerial change for the Mexican national team, for El Tri. Victor Manuel Vucetich, who came in, took charge of the last two games, scrappily got them World Cup qualification, and really it was all down to the men's US men's national team, has been sacked after a month, under a month, pretty much. And unbelievably, now Miguel Herrera, Club America coach, is expected to take the role. Club America are doing very well indeed in Liga MX this season. So many changes, so little time. I mean, Vucetich had two games to, as a national team manager, to get a side that was performing terribly to a standard where they could win games. And they left it late against Panama. It wasn't overly impressive, aside from the bicycle kick winner from Jimenez. They weren't great against Costa Rica, but they've got there. You would have thought they would like to give the Vucetich a bit of time, a bit of structure now. He's got a fair few months, just under a year, to sort his side out and to get them prepared for the World Cup, both mentally and physically, as a group. I mean, it baffles me that suddenly they bring in Miguel Herrera. We need to discuss. It's not been confirmed that Herrera is going to be the manager just yet. We're still waiting on confirmation of that. We need to discuss that with maybe Eric Gomez or with or with Kim Tate or somebody. But your first thoughts on Mexico making a very quick managerial change once again, man?
I mean, it seems like whoever's in charge at you know, the Mexican Football Federation, that they're running around with their head cut off, you know, like a chicken with its head cut off. I don't understand these decisions. I mean, obviously, you know, they're in a very, very tenuous situation with the results. You know, like they couldn't accept a loss in Costa Rica. It happened. They still managed to get to a playoff. You know, I think that that's a reaction to that result. I don't know, Juice. I don't know these Mexican managers well enough to really give you a strong opinion on whether or not, you know, any of these guys are really capable of you know, handling that job in that position. It's got to be, you know, one of the tougher positions in managing football, just because of like the expectations. You know, it's kind of like the U.S. in the sense that, well, it's very much like the U.S. Like we expect to qualify. It's expected for you to get to the World Cup. You know, and then you know, once you get there, you're expected to be a damn good team and represent really well. And you do let down your country a little bit if you don't win it. Unfortunately, that's just how we look at it. Just a no-win situation right now at all for anybody who steps into that position.
Well, I mean, if it is Miguel Herrera, there are two positives. A, his Club America side are doing fantastically well. One loss in their last 13 games, and are storming at the moment in the Apertura season, 6 points ahead of everybody else at the moment. So they're bringing in a manager who's obviously got enough quality to get Club America, you know, who are a big, obviously big Mexican side, and you'd expect them to be in and around the top of the table anyway. But you know, he's
very familiar.
He's a manager
with,
that can work.
Very familiar with Mexico City as well.
Well,
very,
and the fact he's in the Azteca, you know, for home games. I mean, it won't feel like a bit maybe too daunting or anything like that. Genuinely, you know, if I was a manager walking out into the Azteca for the first time as the Mexican national team coach, and I'd only ever been there as an opposing manager, for instance, or it wasn't like my comfort zone, if you will, you walk out and you would be a little bit like, whoa,
a little shocked. Yeah.
There are
a lot grabbed by the situation.
There are a lot of people looking at me to get us out of some jail here. Oh man,
You're right. So this manager is very familiar with being in the spotlight generally. in the headlines and in the major headlines, you know, the national and kind of even city, obviously, you know, the big city that is Mexico City, you know, one of the largest cities in the world. And of course, you know, what that entails with the national kind of publicity as well. Massive coverage, he's very kind of familiar with being in that spotlight, which is something that this manager, you know, this position needs to be able to do. He needs to be able to talk to the press, talk to the media, seem comfortable, seem familiar with the situation, kind of steady the ship is really what Mexico need at this point.
Very much so, very much so. We will need to discuss this in greater detail with one of our Mexican football experts, that's for sure. But true, the news today that Miguel Herrera looks set to replace Victor Manuel Vukotic, who has been removed as the Mexico national team manager. Just a final couple more things, Raf, before we do the remaining games from around Europe and Major League Soccer that are coming up this weekend, because we are obviously in the big money stage of Major League Soccer. We need to keep eyes and ears all on that. My favourite story to come out from today, and it's a really peculiar one. We all remember the great Colombia side of 94. We were talking about it a little bit on yesterday's show with Tim Vickery. And in general, we've discussed it at a great length a number of times on this show about just how good they were, the tragedies that they suffered, etc. And obviously a key star of that was the ex-Newcastle United striker Faustino Asprilla. Now, Asprilla has recently been offered a new contract to, I guess, if you want to call it, get his scoring boots on again. This is the weirdest post-football move I think I've ever heard of a footballer possibly making. Faustino Asprilla has been offered a reasonable amount of money to join the adult entertainment industry, to become a porn star, to get his scoring Brilliant. Boots on. I have never heard, you know, footballers, what do you do after football? Well, you can go into coaching, you can go into management, you can go into being an agent, being a player's manager, representative, you can go into advisory roles at football clubs, right. You can become chairman, you can go into television, you know, yeah. you can be behind the mic, you can be behind the in front of the camera. But I have never ever heard of somebody contemplating going into porn in my entire life as a footballer. I mean, that'd be so... How does that come about? Apparently this adult film company has approached him and are pleading for him to get involved. Now, I don't know what their thought process is. I mean, and other footballers as well. Can you imagine other footballers being offered? Like, obviously, there's that kind of stereotypical, oh, man, Latin America's crazy, you know. But this is... Mm-hmm. I would never imagine in my entire life, you know, Asprilla, it was kind of like the Beckham or Michael Owen, if you will, of Colombian football. I could never imagine in my entire life Michael Owen being offered a contract to do porn. Like, it just wouldn't happen. Just wouldn't happen.
Well, look, Juice, I really, really wanted to bring this up the other day. It was probably like 2 weeks ago, but basically it was a... It was a story about our dear Cantona, Eric Cantona, who recently has been filming an art deco kind of artsy film. I forget exactly where I can't even remember the story. Oh, here's the story. That's right. It's a couple, and he's not. He may or may not be part of the couple. I think he is actually the guy in the couple. No. He is somebody who comes later. Okay, so there's a couple, and this couple also has a nanny, or kind of a, you know, a house lady, but she's pretty attractive, I guess, supposedly. And they all get together to arrange basically like an orgy, I'm thinking. And what happens is this orgy, you know, comes over, and Eric Cantona is one of the people in the orgy, and he is essentially getting filmed naked in this orgy that gets, you know, slightly filmed. It's an artsy film. Let's, you know, think Eyes Wide Shut.
Let's not filth this up, kind of thing. You know,
right. Yeah, I'm not trying to make it a pornography, but the simple fact of the matter is very much like what you just brought up. Eric Cantona is off kind of, well, stripping down for the camera, essentially. I mean, no matter how you look at it, Juice, he's, I mean, his goods are out for the for the public viewing at some point when this film gets released. If I find it, I'll let you know. But it was a story that I wanted to bring up a couple of weeks ago. I literally felt a bit kind of dirty talking about it because I didn't want to, you know, I don't know. I just don't want to always come off as like the disgusting kind
The seedy American. Yeah.
right. You know, like the guys whose mind stuck in the gutter the whole time.
You'd never come off as that, Raf. Don't you worry about thanks. That. But thanks, it yeah. is very, very peculiar. Faustino Asprilla could be coming to a hotel room near you very soon indeed. Let's wrap up the show with the fixtures. We've already been through Premier League, of course, and a couple of tonight's games. Let's remind you of that cracking Serie A tie, Roma against Napoli tonight, first against second. Are Roma the real deal? I think we could be finding out tonight. Cagliari take on Catania. AC Milan take on Udinese. Those games both on Saturday and on Sunday in Serie A. Atalanta take on Lazio. Sassuolo take on Bologna. Fiorentina take on Juventus. Genoa take on Chievo. Verona meeting Parma. Livorno meets Sampdoria. And Inter take on Torino. In La Liga in Spain, Real Madrid take on Malaga. What would have been an incredibly tasty tie. Probably last year really, but not so much these days with Malaga and their slight plight, if you will. Valencia take on Real Sociedad. Osasuna take on Barca in an interesting game. Espanyol take on Atletico Madrid. Still those rumours fly around about Koke and his potential departure from Atletico. On Sunday, Granada meet Getafe. Almeria take on Rayo Vallecano. Real Betis take on Elche. And Valladolid take on Sevilla in Das Bundesliga. Hoffenheim take on Bayer Leverkusen. And then on Saturday, Dortmund meet Hannover. Munich take on Mainz. Werder Bremen take on Freiburg. Braunschweig take on Schalke. Eintracht Frankfurt take on Nuremberg. Hertha Berlin take on Borussia Mönchengladbach. And then on Sunday, Hamburg take on Stuttgart. And Augsburg take on Wolfsburg. Remember, the last time we were in Bundesliga action, Gladbach battered Dortmund 2-0 in a very peculiar weekend of results, especially Bayer Leverkusen drawing with Bayern Munich. The juggernaut of Bayern Munich stopped again last time out by Leverkusen. Will it happen this weekend? We will find out. In Ligue 1, Nice and Marseille meet this evening, as do Reims and Toulouse. And then on Saturday, PSG take on Bastia, Ajaccio take on Nantes, Evian take on Guingamp, Rennes take on Valenciennes, Montpellier meet Lille. And then on Sunday, Sochaux may take on Monaco, Saint-Étienne meet Lorient, and Lyon meet Bordeaux. And finally, in your Major League Soccer action, with just two teams qualified for the playoffs so far, we have Kansas City taking on DC United, the Montreal Impact meet the Philadelphia Union, FC Dallas take on the Seattle Sounders, and the Colorado Rapids meet the Vancouver Whitecaps. And then on also the New England Revolution take on the Columbus Crew, Chicago Fire take on Toronto, and Portland Timbers take on RSL. Portland, just 5 losses on the season at this point. Absolutely incredible their run. Mm-hmm. Too many draws, though, unfortunately. That's the one thing, too many draws. And Sunday's game, the Houston Dynamo take on the New York Red Bulls. The Red Bulls already in the playoffs. The Dynamo looking to wrap up their spot in these final few weeks of the season. Plenty to play for all across the board, especially in Major League Soccer. Those 10 playoff spots are still up for grabs, and it's very tight in the East and in the West in the race for those spots. We're going to leave it there for today. Big thanks once again for Nick Schepanek for joining us here on WFD. A big thanks to all of our guests this week, as always. A big thanks to you guys, of course, for tuning in and sticking with us during the international break. We are back to regular football, and we will have Champions League action just around the corner as well. It's getting back to the beautiful game, and lots of it. That's what we like to see. And of course, Raf, a big thanks to you as well. This has been a week of World Football Daily, and this has been Friday's edition of the show. I've been Oliver the Juice Wilson. Enjoy the football this weekend. Remember to tweet us at WFootballDaily over the weekend and email show at WorldFootballDaily. 310-998-483 is the rant line, and there's the Facebook page as well. We're out of here. We're going to enjoy the football tonight. It's a Serie A evening on a Friday. Can't wait to get it started. Have a good one.